Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and the stars are out tonight. Well, at least two of them anyway. Singer and pianist Tori Amos is going to play for us in just a moment. She sold over 12 million albums and is about to put out her 14th record, which we'll get a little taste of. And we'll get a visit from actor John Turturro, who's probably most famous for his roles in films like Do the Right Thing, The Big Lebowski, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, and the Transformers series. But Turturro is also a writer and director and a huge music fan. All of those things come together in his new movie, Fading Gigolo, which stars John Turturro as an unlikely male escort and Woody Allen as his even more unlikely pimp.
I am not a beautiful man.
Did I say you were beautiful? But you have a different quality. You have a certain kind of sex appeal. Is Mick Jagger a beautiful man? The guy opens his mouth to sing. It's a horror. But he's hot. Mick is hot. And that's what you have.
John Turturro talks about finding sexy music in unlikely places later on Soundcheck. But first,
the time you sailed under the diamond eye of a dolphin who for a song had crossed night.
The last three albums by the singer-songwriter Tori Amos each had a big overarching idea. There was a seasonal record called Midwinter Graces, a classical song cycle called Night of Hunters, and most recently, a 2012 album called Gold Dust, which featured orchestral reinterpretations of Tori Amos's own songs. Well, her new album, Unrepentant Geraldines, still has a big idea. In fact, it has a lot of them. Listen closely to these 14 songs and you'll hear about the French painter Paul Cézanne and his affinity for the color blue, the infamous whistleblower Edward Snowden, Tori Amos's own teenage daughter, and in the song she's about to perform in our studio, a little bit of classic Southern Gothic-style storytelling. The song is called Trouble's Lament. It's from the new album Unrepentant Geraldines, and this is Tori Amos live on Soundcheck.
Trouble needs a home, girls. Trouble needs a home. She fell out with Satan. Now she's on the run. But I have found her quite straightforward in her contracts and her deals. She warns me when danger is, lives behind tears always. And tears, lives behind tears always. She got betrayed by her friend despair. Now the flames from Satan's tongue are charged and licking at her heels. She whispers, hey, ginger dangers, lives behind tears wheels. And Satan knows how danger makes you feel. What will be, will be, baby. Thank you. she did, she did. She did, she did, girls. You know she did. Trouble needs a home, girls. A covert abode. From Tucson to Ohio, back through to Bagahura. And she is armed and will fight for the souls of girls around the world, standing up to Satan, dancing on St. Michael's side. I'm on her side in this brutal war. Don't cry, baby. In my eyes, if danger wants to find me, I'll let him in. He can find me. Trouble needs a home, girls. Trouble needs a home. Trouble needs a home, girls. Will you give her one? Trouble needs a home. Trouble needs a home.
That is Tori Amos live on soundcheck with her song Trouble's Lament, which is from the forthcoming album called Unrepentant Geraldines. Tori Amos, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Hello, John. How are you?
Good. And you?
Really good.
You seem really excited about this record. First of all, this record has some really incredible storytelling on it. And the idea of trouble as a character seems to go back, sort of goes hand in hand with those old Southern songs about death as a person. You know, like, oh, death, pass me over another year, that sort of thing.
Yes, I think growing up, I heard a lot of Johnny Cash, a lot of old storytelling that Southerners would sit on porches and tell these stories, that whether they get passed down or not from generation to generation, and then it comes out in music. It was just something I grew up with. And my husband was playing my daughter all kinds of music over the last couple years because she's been open to Stevie Ray Vaughan and everything else. So that was slipping in there, too.
Yeah. So now your daughter, Tasha, she's a teenager now, right?
She's 13.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the age where if you can slip a little good music in there, it has a good chance of sticking.
That's the thing. I mean, she's open. She's open-minded. She's discovering all kinds of people. She's just discovered Nirvana, which is very exciting.
Nice. Now, the idea of telling stories and telling stories about women of all ages, from teenage to, you know, of a certain age.
Yes, yes.
Is also part and parcel of this new record, it seems.
Well, I was turning 50, and it seemed to me that I was being told from other ages that every age had its challenges. So the teenagers were saying to me, there was this young guy who was 17 saying, you have no idea. I have to decide for the rest of my life what I'm going to be, and I don't know what I'm going to be. And then the 20-somethings, when I was visiting New York, would talk to me about they've just graduated from university, and they owe all this money, and they couldn't get a job. And they said, my future's really bleak.
Right.
And so all these stories were beginning to come into 16 Shades of Blue.
Mm-hmm. Which is a reference to one of the other major kind of through lines in this record, visual art.
Visual art, yes.
So explain 16 Shades of Blue, where that comes from.
I haven't gotten Paul Cézanne's work for the longest time. People would be slipping me books, and they would just say, you know, T, you need to be open to this. And it would go over my head. Honestly, I don't know. It's a bit embarrassing to say that, but it's just the truth. So finally, the penny dropped when I was looking at the black clock. Somehow I'd gotten this story about him, about his life. And I was reading about him, and I started looking at this picture, and the rhythms began in my head. that became 16 Shades of Blue. And I read that Rilke had said that Cézanne would have at least 16 shades of blue some at times on
his
palette.
Yeah. So the poet Rilke said that about Cézanne.
Yes, correct.
Okay. Well, he kept good company.
Right.
So the title, Unrepentant Geraldines, this also has a visual art background to it.
I walked into the Irish house, and honestly, I did not put that picture up there. So it made its way up there. I have a friend who's into art, and I think Vincent must have put it up there. But I was looking at it, and Geraldine is from the 19th century, and she was praying to the Mother Mary because she had gotten into all sorts of bother. And so I started to think about, she was being the repentant Geraldine. So I began thinking about not apologizing for what you believe in and where you stand, and that all women are really Geraldine.
And there's this long tradition, especially in medieval European art, of paintings of Mary Magdalene.
Correct.
As a penitent Mary
Magdalene,
as opposed to being, you know, as we're told in the gospel, a close friend of Jesus.
Mm.
So there's a kind of a weird, it's strange the way that character has come down to us as this kind of figure of repentance.
That's right. That was the original motivation, looking at Titian and some of the older artists that had been painting the repentant Magdalene. And so once we got to Geraldine, it was very much the repentant Geraldine in that old style looking up.
Yeah. So unrepentant Geraldines is your answer to this long tradition of men portraying women.
You know it.
Tori Amos is my guest on Soundcheck. The album called Unrepentant Geraldines comes out on May 13th. The last three albums that you've done had, as I mentioned in the introduction, kind of big ideas behind them. Did that change the kind of songwriting and storytelling process when it came to making this record?
I was thrown off the deep end, I guess, working with Deutsche Grammophon. And
for folks who don't know, Deutsche Grammophon is the most prestigious classical music record label
in the world.
In the world.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I was under contract for two works for them while I was working under commission for the British National Theatre to do The Light Princess.
Right.
With Sam Adamson, my writing partner. And I guess the mixture of these projects working together, telling stories in the musical, having to move the dramaturgical line forward through song, as well as these expanding structures that I was hearing from the masters that I was studying to do variations on classical themes for Night of Hunters, the album. So I'd say to you that all these projects were completely turning my life around, opening me up, that I would kind of run to make these little secret songs that have become Unrepentant Geraldines.
Yeah. Although, you know, for folks who've been paying attention, there have been sort of classical leanings in a lot of your music. I mean, I think of a song like Yes, Anastasia, you know, like a 9-minute long epic that sounds like it could have been written a century ago by, you know, a French Impressionist or something.
I love the French Impressionists. When I was little, I would study them. And I guess through different times in your life as a musician, you explore with the seeds that get planted along the way.
Mm.
Sometimes you leave certain traditions for a while and then you come back to them. And who knows, John, I don't know what it is that gets you to go back to them again, what the inspiration is. But it's hard to explain.
I guess you don't question that inspiration when it goes, where did that come from? You just go with it.
You go with it.
Yeah.
And when the muses are knocking on your shoulder, even if you're on an 8-lane freeway, you pull over.
Has that happened?
Oh, yeah, that happens. Their timing sometimes. I was in Paris the other day going on live radio, and this song was coming, and Johnny, my manager, said, I swear to God, I've got to get the muses a schedule. Don't they understand it's live radio?
Well, here you are with us in the Soundcheck studio and about to do another song from the new record for us, Selkie. Now, this is presumably inspired by the old Scottish myth of the Selkie, which is
correct
people who have been turned into seals.
Yes. Okay. They're seal beings.
Seal beings.
And they unzip their skin and can live the life of a human until they put their seal skin back on and then go back to their seal family. And some people get caught in between which family they want to be with.
Are you familiar with the film The Secret of Rowan Inish?
I am not.
Oh, it came out about the same time as your first record, I think. Beautiful little film about the legend of the Selkies.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, you should check it out. You want to play the song for us?
Yeah.
All right. Tori Amos. The album is called Unrepentant Geraldines, comes out on May 13th. Tori is touring the States this summer, and for our WDET listeners, she'll be at Detroit's Fox Theater on August 6th. She'll be here in New York at the Beacon Theater on August 12th and 13th. All that is still in the future. In the immediate future, though, is this live performance. Here's a song called Selkie, Tori Amos, live on Soundcheck.
Selkie unzips her skin, finally determined. Through a window in the dark, there he sits all alone. I've been waiting. Selkie battle tide and wave, just to gaze upon his face, hiding behind rocks to learn if he found a new love. Lorelei sings the song. There inside his cabinet, folded safe, a seal skin. I've been waiting on the love of my life to find. He's been waiting on his to come back, he said, I know.
That's Tori Amos live in the Soundcheck studio playing a new song called Selkie. It'll be on her upcoming album, Unrepentant Geraldines, which comes out on May 13th. We've been getting a sneak preview, but in just a moment, Tori Amos will play a favorite from her debut record, Little Earthquakes. That's next, and then we'll have a conversation with actor, director, writer, and serious jazz fan, John Turturro. This is Soundcheck.
I run off where the drifts get deep.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, here in the studio today with singer, songwriter, and pianist Tori Amos. She's set to release her new album, Unrepentant Geraldines, on May 13th. And she just played a couple of songs from it here in the studio at Our Piano. You can watch video of today's performances. Just head over to soundcheck.org. Now, most of us first met Tori Amos 14 albums ago. Yes, 14 albums ago. With her solo debut called Little Earthquakes.
When you gonna make up your mind, 'cause things are gonna change so fast. All the white horses are still in bed.
That's the song Winter from Tori Amos' 1992 record Little Earthquakes, one of several standout tracks that are beautiful but also startling and frank, like Me and a Gun, Silent All These Years, and this next song. This is Crucify. It's Tori Amos live in the Soundcheck studio.
Every finger in the room is pointing at me. I wanna spit in the faces, then I get afraid of what that could bring. I got a bowling ball in my stomach, I got a desert in my mouth. Figures that my courage would choose to sell out now. I've been looking for a savior in these dirty streets. Looking for a savior beneath these dirty sheets. I've been raising up my hands, driving another nail in. Just what God needs, one more victim. Why do we crucify ourselves every day? I crucify myself. Nothing I did was good enough for you. I crucify myself every day. I crucify myself. And my heart is sick of being and knowing. And she's in again. Suffering so that I can have my cross. I know a cat named Easter. He says, will you ever learn? You're just an empty cage, girl, if you kill the bird. I've been looking for a savior in these dirty streets. Looking for a savior beneath these dirty sheets. I've been raising up my hands, driving another nail in. I got enough guilt to start my own religion. Why do we crucify ourselves every day? I crucify myself. Nothing I do is good enough for you. I crucify myself every day. I crucify myself. And my heart is sick of being in knowing that she's in again. Jesus. city street, looking for a savior beneath these dirty sheets. I've been raising up my hands, dropping another nail in with those angels when you need them. Why do we crucify ourselves every day? I crucify myself, and nothing I do is good enough for you. I crucify myself every day. I crucify myself, and my heart is sick of being in nowhere. She's in again. Jeans. I'm never going back again to crucify myself again. I'm never going back again to crucify my land. I'm never going back again to crucify myself again. I'm never going back again to crucify myself.
Tori Amos, live on Soundcheck, and her song Crucify, live performance. The forthcoming album is called Unrepentant Geraldine, so that, of course, going all the way back to 1992, that song, Crucify. And, Tori, we were talking before about inspiration, where it comes from, when it comes. When you're going back to a song that's now, like, 22 years old, or with Gold Dust, where you were revisiting older songs and orchestrating them, do you still find things in your older songs that surprise you when you come back to them?
Well, yes, because through the years, people have told me their stories and their impressions of the songs, so that when I was first discovering the song itself, I see it as a co-write. It's a co-write between the song and me as a writer, a grafter, a scribe. And therefore, 22 years later, I've heard other people's relationships with it. So when I play it now, I carry all those impressions with me. Sometimes they're not at the top of the forefront of my mind.
Right, right.
They're more in the bone.
Yeah.
They're in the muscle memory. But when you play it, you carry all that with you.
Yeah. The idea that, you know as much or as little about your song as your listeners do.
Completely.
Is a really intriguing one.
And it's true.
Yeah.
The songs have always told me for a long, long time, your impression of this is only your impression. You need to be a good container and a good scribe,
mm-hmm.
and a good musician and write it. Try and stay out of the way. So you write it, but then me as me, I have an impression of, I have my pictures when I see Selke. I have my pictures when I see a song, but that doesn't mean, that's just my imprintation.
Right, right.
And they've told me that I have to be cautious of that.
The songs have told you that.
Yeah, they've told me that.
Yeah. Well, it's got to be a somewhat different experience, though, when you're writing for the theater. Now, you alluded to this piece, The Light Princess, before, which you did with London's National Theater.
Yes.
So, I mean, there is a narrative, and presumably everyone is on the same journey, following the same characters.
Right.
Listening to the same story. What is the status of that? Will we get to see this piece in America?
Oh, that is the plan, John. That's the plan. But the National Theater, we've come from non-commercial theater. So what has been truly exciting about building this piece is we were told, don't you dumb this down.
Well, this that's a nice change.
Yeah, right? This is not something that every demographic needs to be comfortable with or every type of ticket buyer needs to be comfortable with. And that allowed the Light Princess to be brave and bold and to sometimes push buttons. Mm. It was built to do that. It wasn't built for everybody to be sitting in that seat and thinking, you know, this is the most comfortable thing I've ever watched. But hopefully you walk out of there excited, moved, motivated, and the cast recording will be out. I'm producing it now with my team. So we just did the orchestra 2 weeks ago in London. And while we're on the road with the 80 shows, we'll be recording the actors when we can get we can find them, and then we'll be putting it out next year.
Okay. And that, too, is based on an old Scottish tale, right?
Interesting, yes. George MacDonald was the writer, the original writer. And so his story, he's such an incredible writer. It is a jumping-off point, though, because we started discovering all kinds of things. Why a gal floats. That was part of our adventure and understanding. What does it mean to be light? What does that truly mean? And it needed to resonate with people in the 21st century.
No, it's a piece that has been in progress for a number of years. I remember you talking about this like 3 or 4 years ago when you were here. So it's been mounted,
yes,
cast recording, and eventually.
That's the idea, John. Everybody cross fingers.
Okay. In the meantime, big tour this summer, just you. And the piano.
Yeah.
Don't sound so...
No, I don't mean that. I'm saying how great to be with the orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
That was thrilling. And to be with the Fab Four, the Polish quartet, Apollone Muzajet. So that I kind of figured Tash was having this conversation with me and she said...
Tash is your daughter.
She's my daughter, yeah. She just said, okay, so you're 50. Go rock.
Well, if Mick and Keith and the guys can do it.
Why not, right?
Absolutely. Tori Amos, my guest on Soundcheck. The album is called Unrepentant Geraldines. It comes out on May 13th. She's been playing live for us once again here in the Soundcheck studio, as she has done in the past. And Tori, always a pleasure to have you with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Trouble got evicted from the devil's lair. I wager she got betrayed by her friend despair. Now the flames from Satan's tongue are charged and licking at her ears. She whispers, agent of dangers, loose beyond his wheels. And Satan knows.
Up next, a go-to actor for director Spike Lee and for the Coen brothers, John Turturro has portrayed a frustrated writer, a bigoted pizzeria employee, and a very intimidating bowler. Now in his own film, Turturro plays an aging bookstore clerk and florist with an unusual part-time job. We'll talk about Woody Allen, jazz, and the new film Fading Gigolo next on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Actor John Turturro last joined us on the show when he directed a documentary about music in Naples, Italy. That film was called Passione. His new film, a feature with Turturro and Woody Allen heading a small but all-star cast, is also about passion. And, in a sense, about music, too. It's called Fading Gigolo, and this song by the jazz sax player Gene Ammons serves as a kind of theme song for the film. John Turturro is back in our soundcheck studio. It's not every day that Tori Amos is your opening act, John.
Well, that's a contractual obligation.
Yeah. this Canadian Sunset by Gene Ammons, it appears several times in the film.
It's really the opening, and then it kind of fades out, then it comes back again, and then it's also the closing song, too.
So clearly this song means something to you.
Well, I'm a huge Gene Ammons fan. My father had this album, Boss Tenor. I put it on when I was writing the script, and there's just something about this track, which is very inviting, and you just feel like there's all these possibilities going on. There's a little mischievous quality, and it's a sense of like how life renews itself. And it's not bombastic at all. It's just a beautiful arrangement of it, and I like music that kind of invites you in and doesn't tell you, you know, how to feel exactly.
Right. So the idea of writing a film like Fading Gigolo, which is, you know, it has this kind of gently comedic look at sex, both from passion and for pay.
Right, that's right.
But, you know, it ends up being about renewal. You know, especially in one case,
right.
The Hasidic widow played by Vanessa Paradis.
That's right.
You know, her life is renewed through her association with your character.
That's right. I mean, it's kind of, you know, it explores this, you know, people's unceasing need for human connection. She's a widow, but obviously she has never, ever been courted by a man. She was just given to this older, big Rebbe. And it's the first time in her life anyone's actually been interested, you know, in who she is and where she gets to kind of expose who she is to a man. And she goes through this little, you know, courtship. And the character that I play, obviously, he's very attracted to her, too, on an emotional level.
Which he's not supposed to be, because your character, who starts the film as a bookstore clerk and /florist,
right.
is being hired out by his friend
right.
for sex.
Well,
you know,
people do have to reinvent themselves. You know, I mean, you know, I was thinking about it because my friend, his name is Herb Weitz. He had a bookstore, a rare bookstore, in 91st in Lexington, and it was a shop that you could go into and play chess, and you'd actually, you know, inhale a lot of marijuana smoke too at the same time. Well, they actually bound books and they sold rare books, and then he lost his bookshop, and you know, you see all these bookstores
right, right.
going out of business, and I kept thinking, well, you know, what's he going to do? And then the combination of thinking about me and Woody together as a team, and I was thinking, wow, what would happen if they wound up in the sex business? And there's been so many films the sex business from like 1930 on, you know. And Woody was intrigued by that idea as this unlikely duo.
The funny thing is, though, I mean, you know, it's so funny to hear some of this music in a context that is different from when it was originally recorded. And I'm thinking especially of the trombone shorty tune,
Neff.
Right. Which has always had a kind of funky New Orleans party hardy kind of feel to it. In the middle of this movie, it's like, holy cow, how did I miss how sexy this is?
Well, you know, it depends how, you know, what you put, the images that you put the music to. I mean, obviously, we introduce it. Woody has an African-American girlfriend and all these stepkids, and he's taking them to get deloused, which is something that's true. There's a lot of women who delouse
Hasidic
kids,
women especially, yeah.
That's right. I've been through that a bunch of times. And
with your kids.
With my kids, that's right. And I also was checked, too, you know. But I thought when they're walking into Williamsburg, I thought we tried different kinds of Hasidic music and, you know, klezmer music, and it just seemed so redundant to the images. And also, when you think of any neighborhood, there's always this collision between different groups that goes on. And it just we tried it. I'm a fan of trombone shorties, and it just seemed to kind of really, you know, work.
It really does work. You have to see it in the film. The film's called Fading Gigolo by my guest John Turturro, and this song is called Neff from Trombone Shorty. Trombone Shorty from New Orleans, yes. And Neff is the name of the song. It's now on the soundtrack to the movie Fading Gigolo, which is in theaters now, the film written and directed by John Turturro, who stars in it along with Woody Allen. There is original music. Composer Bill Maxwell does a couple of cues.
Yeah, a couple of cues.
But the vast majority of music in the film is from records. Some
right.
of it is diegetic. In other words, the characters are hearing it in the scene.
Right, right. It could be played in the flower shop. Right.
Right.
There's a French song by Dalida called La Volotera. I found this CD on the streets of Paris. I just liked how she looked. She had this kind of 60s look, and I recognized a few songs from my experience doing the Neapolitan documentary.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought it, and I fell in love with her voice, and I used two of her songs.
So how did the writing of the script, which seems to have gone hand in hand with the discovery of some of these records, how did that writing process, how was it affected, if at all?
I think it was affected. I think the Gene Ammons album affected it, and I think the Dalida CD affected it, because she's kind of the voice of the film, and he's kind of like the soul of the film in a way. She's, you know, the vocal kind of leader of it. And there's a song that we use called Le Torrent.
Mm-hmm.
And I listened to it so many times, and I didn't really know what it was about, but I fell in love with it. And as I was trying to get the rights for it, just to see if it would be available, I realized it was about a woman's kind of journey towards independence. And I, you know, and that's one of the themes kind of in the movie. And I would play it when we shot the movie. I actually, when Vanessa Paradis was walking on the streets, I would play that song over and over again. I also played Canadian Sunsets for mm-hmm. other things. And it really helped her.
Is that unusual to actually play the music for the actors while they're on set?
Yes. I was exposed to that when I did a film with Peter Weir and when I worked with Francesco Rosi. And I thought, wow, this is really interesting, because in silent movies, they used to have a band on the set. So a lot of that movement was done to music.
Huh.
And also, if I say, why don't you think about this as you're walking down the street and you stop at a stop sign, and if you put the music on, it helps the people, you know, pushing the dolly, it helps the movement, and it also helps evoke something from the performer.
Right.
And kind of blocks out all this other stuff going around them. So I find it very helpful.
So this Dalida was...
Dalida.
Dalida.
Yes.
Egyptian,
she's
Italian?
She was born in Egypt. She was Italian. I think her name was Donna Giolotta. And then she sang in five different languages.
Including.
And she was a big star. But mostly she sang in French.
All right. As she does in this song called Le Torrent.
Comme un torrent qui vient tout droit de la montagne et qui s'enfuit en bondissant parmi les champs, découvrant dans la campagne toutes les fleurs du printemps. Mon cœur tout neuf est descendu parmi la ville, gonflé d'amour et de bonheur à partager. Mais mon âme est moins tranquille depuis que j'ai tout quitté.
m'invite sa montagne.
The singer is Dalida, and the song is Le Torrent. You can hear it on the soundtrack of the new motion picture Fading Gigolo, which was written and directed and stars John Turturro, who's with me here in the Soundcheck studio. And while you were listening to that, we were talking about the fact that this soundtrack in Dalida's native Italy has gone gangbusters.
Yes, it's the... We were number two behind Frozen, but now we're number one.
You're beating Frozen.
We're beating Frozen, which is...
Nothing has beaten Frozen here.
I can't stop sort of laughing. I was thinking somewhere Gene Ammons and Dolly Dar are both smiling about that, yeah.
So you're now officially an Italian... you're still an American citizen. I mean, you're a New York boy through and through, but you have an Italian passport now.
You can get a dual citizenship. It took me a while to do it. Because I worked there, and it's easier to direct things there, and I thought it would be helpful, for expanding your work horizons.
And then, of course, there was the Passione, the movie that you shot about this amazing music scene in Napoli, in Naples. And there is a connection, a musical and an on-screen connection between the two films.
That's right. Well, Vanessa Paradis sings a song which I wanted to use called Tu sei una cosa grande, which means you are a great thing for me.
Tu sei una cosa grande per me.
We taught her Neapolitan, and she recorded it, and she does a beautiful version, and that's actually on her new album, a double album called Love Songs, which is a wonderful album. And then we also use Embarka Bentalab, who she's from Tunisia, but she lives outside of Naples, and she did a beautiful version of Luna Rosa, which is a Neapolitan song, but she sings it in French. And I encouraged her to listen to Peggy Lee's version of I'm a Fool to Want You, which she fell in love with. And then she translated it into Arabic. Mm-hmm. And she does a version of that.
And so she's actually got accredited. I mean, her name is in the credits right after, Sharon Stone and Sofia Vergara and all
She has
the
a
rest.
Small part. You see her singing in the Village Vanguard.
Well, let's... Now, she also does this song Luna Rossa, which is... You said she sings it in...
In French.
But this is the Tunisian-born, Italian-based singer Mbarka Bentaleb.
Je marche seul, sans penser. Mon chapeau me cache les yeux. Ma dans mes poches colmentées. Je marche, je siffle aux étoiles montant. Et la lune rouge me parle de vous. Et je demande si vous m'attendez. Et il répond si vous voulez vraiment savoir. Ici il n'y a personne. Et je dis votre nom.
That is Mbarka Bentaleb from the soundtrack to the film Fading Gigolo. Although, John Turturro, if people want to see this, see the performance, they'd have to wait for a director's cut of the film.
See the performance of
this song.
Of that song, yes.
But we do get to see her doing a little bit of live performance, you said, at the Village Vanguard.
At the Village Vanguard, you see her sing I'm a Fool to Want You. But the DVD comes out, we'll have the long version where you can see her sing both.
Okay. That shot at the Village Vanguard, there are some scenes that are shot in Manhattan. You see Prospect Park, you see the merry-go-round there, the carousel at Prospect Park, lots of what looks like Borough Park.
It was actually more like Clinton Hill.
Okay.
Clinton Hill. The florist shop is Florabella, but that's on 13th Street.
The idea is, the film is very local. It's a very New York story.
Right.
But the soundtrack, the sound, the music is very global.
Well, I think, we're a diverse city. We're, a multicultural city. I try to represent that representing that within the film, even in socioeconomic means, in terms. But I think that's what we, you know, we don't have one soundtrack in the city at all. And I think that's a fair representation of the city in a way.
We're talking about John Turturro's movie called Fading Gigolo, which is in theaters now, and its soundtrack, which is out now. The film also represents a rare acting role for Woody Allen in a film that he didn't direct.
Right.
So you guys share a love of jazz. I mean, he plays clarinet famously and stuff. Was that the original connection?
I guess, you know, I knew he liked my work. I'm a big fan of his. We're both basketball fans, too, and jazz fans. And,
Knicks or Nets?
Knicks. I'm a Knicks fan. A sufferer. Sufferer. Complete sufferer. We actually do share this guy who cuts both of our hair. And for years he's been saying, well, you know, you should work with Woody. And then one day I thought, wow, you know, we could possibly be a good team. Sometimes you think, you know, with that person, maybe I could have an interesting chemistry.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just an instinct. And so I told him this idea for the movie, and then he told Woody, and then Woody was really intrigued.
Wait, you told the barber?
Yeah, Anthony Silvestri. And Anthony said, Woody.
This is like something out of a Spike Lee movie
Is, yeah. I mean, this is how business used to happen in not hair salons, but barbershops, and maybe hair salons too. And then, you know, Woody, when I met Woody, he said, so we share a barber, you know? I said, yes, Woody. And he was intrigued. So I did, you know, I would write it, and then Woody would give me his feedback.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think the strength of the film is that it's kind of a real human comedy. Mm-hmm. There's a gentleness to the movie. It's not really forced. So
Now, you couldn't have known that just as the film was coming out that the whole controversy with his family would rear its ugly head again.
No, it was all done before that it reared its head again or, you know, came back into the news. So it's something that I don't really know anything about. And, you know, I just thought, well, I made a fiction, a film. And, you know, Woody's worked with a lot of people since this alleged thing occurred. He has become kind of a friend of mine because we worked in the theater together. I just plowed ahead and say, hey, this is the film and this is the work.
He seems to be having a great time in this movie.
I think he is. I mean, he's not wearing khaki pants, so maybe that changed everything.
You've got to see her. You're not going to believe it. You can't be blasé about this. She is well-constructed anatomically. I mean, I'm talking about like a miracle of physics. I don't know what keeps her up.
Is this Dr. Parker's friend?
Dr. Parker's wealthy friend.
Shh. Do me a favor. Think of it as a performance.
Uh-huh.
You know, because that's what they want. They want you to play act anyhow.
And the billing?
I'm gonna give you a prepared envelope, and we'll put something in it. And then, if they give you gratuity or something, I'll give you a second envelope for that.
He was really wonderful to work with because he's so disciplined, and he comes to work. He's so ready to go, and because he's a musician, he has that jazz man's approach to things. And he was a stand-up too, but he always will, you know, vary sometimes the words a little bit and vary the takes. So he knew me really well, and I think what you see in the movie is kind of our relationship, you know, in under imaginary circumstances.
Right. Yes. Fading Gigolo is the name of the movie. It is out now, written and directed by John Turturro, who stars in it along with Woody Allen and a cast not of thousands, but a very small and select group of actors who perform with you guys. And then at the very end of the movie, that sax player again, Gene Ammons, gets a special thanks.
Yes, because I think that there's just something about his sound. He has this beautiful, big, buttery, long, rolling line sound. It's very sexy music, too. He has a sensual kind of sound. I mean, he does a version of My Way, he has, which is about 7 minutes long, which is just incredible. I think it's the best version I've ever heard of the song. I'm a huge fan of his.
Yeah, maybe we'll end with that. With Gene Ammons playing a version of My Way, it's not on the Fading Gigolo soundtrack, though there are a couple of Gene Ammons pieces.
Yes, My Romance is one of them.
John Turturro wrote, directed, and starred in Fading Gigolo, which is in theaters now. The soundtrack, well, it's selling like hotcakes in Italy, and I think it's a pretty great soundtrack, too. John, thank you so much for being with us.
Okay, thanks for having me.
Tomorrow on the show, novelist Francine Prose joins us with a Pick 3 playlist of songs that are related to her well-received and sprawling new novel, Lovers at the Chameleon Club, Paris 1932. And Meredith Graves, she leads the fiery punk band called Perfect Pussy. We'll talk about politics, noise rock, and yes, the band's name. Plus, singer, songwriter, and pianist Casey Dinell makes unsettling but absorbing songs under the name White Hinterland. She'll play songs from her new album, Baby, live in the Soundcheck studio. That's tomorrow. Thanks for being with us today. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.